News Talk Breakfast with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
In association with AIR.
On News Talk.
Catherine Connolly. Good morning to you, Catherine.
Good morning to you, Gwitcher and Roger.
Thank you. And we're delighted to have you here in studio. Let's start with the broad strokes. Why do you want to be president?
Well, thank you for telling me what day it was and what date it was. That's very helpful because it's some campaign, really. Why do I want to be president? I guess I want to be president because I think I have the characteristics that people see in me. Somebody that can listen, somebody that can reflect, somebody that doesn't rush to judgment, somebody that will be a voice for peace in a world where we greatly need a voice for peace, somebody, a president who will use their voice to articulate the existential threat posed by climate change. And also, amongst other themes, a voice for the community, the communities all over the country. And I've travelled since the end of July, the fourth week of July, continuously every day. And it is truly amazing the amount of work being done on the ground by communities in various entities. But just let me say, it's not just the work. It's their ability, their creativity, their intelligence to identify the problems and the solutions. And yet all of those groups, whether they're in the form of a co-op or a community group, are struggling year to year for recognition and for funding.
I'm glad you mentioned peace because you have been in hot water, I would suggest, this week for comments you made about Hamas, namely that we shouldn't outrule them having a role in future Palestinian governments. Do you stand by those remarks, Catherine?
I absolutely do. And they were said in the context of the future of Palestine and Keir Starmer ruling in or ruling out who should be part of those talks. And we come from a country that was colonised. We come from the Good Friday Agreement in 1998. And we have to recognise that we've recognised Palestine as a state. And then it's up to the people of Palestine how they envisage that state and what they do with that sovereignty.
But many people would say that Hamas have no role in a democratic state because they were elected in 2006, but they seized power in 2007. They opened fire on political opponents. They threw political opponents off buildings. They imposed Sharia law, the oppression of women, minorities, other religions, that they are not compatible. They are a terrorist organisation. What do you say to
certainly,
that?
They're certainly a terrorist organisation. I've utterly condemned Hamas for their attack on the 7th of October. I've never been equivocal about that. However, Israel is a terrorist state. It's acting like a terrorist state. It's committing genocide. And yet Israel will be in any talks in relation to a peace settlement. So if we're a neutral country and we value our voice and if we want credibility in the world, then we have to use our voice to call out the abuse of power, whether it's by Hamas, by the Israel government or whoever, by Russia.
So even though Hamas have oppressed their own people that they have, we know abused their position of power against Palestinians as well, that anybody who opposes them have been crushed, that they are brutal when it comes to dissent in the Gaza Strip. Even though they are despotic, dictatorial, violent, we still have to talk to them.
No. What I'm saying is we can't decide who decides the sovereignty of Palestine. The Palestinian people must decide.
But that is my point. The Palestinian people have no real voice in this. They do not have democratic elections. They haven't had since 2006.
Many, many countries have had organisations described as terrorists. At the ANC in South Africa.
Do you believe they're a terrorist organisation?
Absolutely. Absolutely. What they've done was wrong. Absolutely. But it's not about Hamas. It's about genocide. And the genocide has unfolded in front of our eyes. And countries belatedly are now recognising Palestine. And that's very welcome. That's very welcome. However, there is a state, that a country that's been destroyed. And so we need first a ceasefire. We need to stop the genocide. The hostages need to be released. Stop the genocide. And then we have peace talks.
OK, so you're standing by those comments. You have been called on to retract them by certain people, but you're standing by those comments.
Certainly in the context I've made them, I am not retracting those comments.
You've been clear in that. A lot of people pointing out that if someone like Michael D. Higgins, our president currently, had made those remarks, that there would be an international incident off the back of them. Do you think you understand the diplomacy required for the role of president?
I think I've no difficulty understanding the diplomacy required as president. I have the Constitution in front of me here. It's a bedside book for me, unfortunately. Unfortunately, I put it both ways, positively and negatively. And of course, the Constitution sets out the role of the president. But within that Constitution, there's an Article 12.8, which I have quoted quite a number of times. And 12.8 obliges any president, and I'm hoping it'll be me, that will take that solemn and public vow to serve the welfare of the people of Ireland. And as I go around the country and listen to people, and it's certainly not in their welfare that we have 16,000 households homeless. It's not in their welfare that every single week people are out protesting against the genocide that's unfolding under our eyes. People are desperately upset, not just about housing, and rightly so, not just about waiting lists for health, but also about the genocide, the slaughter of women and children and men by the Israeli army under Israel. We must put context when we're talking in terms of peace and a ceasefire. We have to put context always, but the most immediate aim for all of us, stop the genocide, please.
Okay. Some of your supporters, such as Paul Murphy from People Before Profit, have said that criticism that you've received this week, because there has been quite a lot of criticism about your remarks on Hamas, that it was an attempt to smear you by the establishment. Mm-hmm. Do you see yourself as an anti-establishment figure?
No, I have a lot of parties behind me, and we've united because this is much bigger than me and it's much bigger than the individual parties. Parties don't agree on everything. That's why we have parties. Mm-hmm. And so they've come together, and it's historic. It's momentum.
And I accept that we've never seen a left alliance like this. But do you see yourself as establishment or anti-establishment?
I have never. You know, I grew up in a family of 14 and I'm allergic to labels. OK, I don't like to be labelled at all, and neither do any of my siblings for that matter. It's sort of a red card to label. You want the freedom to actually think and reflect and make up your mind about matters. Okay. So I got into politics not because I was anti-establishment, but with a sense of social justice that was infused into me on my family floor.
All right. Michael D. Higgins, our president, has been criticised himself on occasion for going beyond the bounds of his presidential role with some of his own commentary. If you were personally at odds with government policy here, would you be public in your opinion on that?
I'm very aware that policy is made by government. I'm fully aware of that. I had 4.5 years as a Laskey on Corle, where I sat and listened to government policy, a lot of which I didn't agree with. So I have no difficulty going into different roles and doing them to the best of my ability. And there is no crossover between government policy. There is a crossover in how one interprets the welfare of the people of Ireland and how I would serve.
So would you, as president, if you felt a conviction to do so, would you publicly criticise the Irish government?
I wouldn't frame the question like that, but I'll try and answer it as best I can. I don't see, I leave the government to make. I've been asked this about the triple lock. It's a matter for the government to decide. Mm-hmm. And then would I sign it into law? We might come back to that. Because it raises the same issue, the role of the president and the role of the government. But the role of the president is not just symbolic. It's very important on a symbolic level. But it's also very important, somebody that has integrity, that has courage to speak out when necessary and appropriate.
Yes, but that sounds good. But it's a little bit vague. You know what I'm asking you. If you were wholly at odds on a personal conviction level with the government, would you criticise them?
But they're very speculative. So I'm a person who thinks and reflects and studies. And I'm a person who's fully aware of the restrictions on the role of president.
Could you stay within them?
Absolutely. I have always stayed within the role. I've worked as a clinical psychologist, a barrister, a Laskey an Corle. All of those roles were a privilege. All of the roles gave me so much experience. Okay. And if I go back to the complexity of people, psychology gave me that, and it gave me the ability to listen and realise that we're not the same.
Okay.
But we do have a lot in common. So I would look to my role to draw people together, stop the divisiveness and be a voice for inclusiveness.
Okay. Sticking before we move on with President Michael D. Higgins, you kind of have described yourself as a sort of a continuity candidate in his vein. Yet when he first ran for president, you didn't endorse him. You endorsed, in fact, a right-wing candidate, Gemma O'Doherty. Why did you favour Ms O'Doherty over President Higgins?
Well, first of all, I did never describe myself as a continuity candidate. I think that was attributed to me in a press conference. Okay. That was attributed to me. Secondly, I have always supported Michael Dee as president. I think he's one of the most courageous presidents we've had. I've said that before. I actually, going back when he wasn't picked by Pat Rabbit at the time, made public comments that it was the wrong decision because the decision at that...
No, I recall you doing it, but I'm asking you specifically why you backed Ms O'Doherty.
I didn't back Ms O'Doherty. I nominated her. And you can see the difficulty of getting nominated.
Are you saying you nominated her in the manner in which some people have nominated Maria Steen?
Absolutely.
So nominate her to allow democracy to function, but not because you endorse her?
Absolutely, absolutely. Absolutely. Right. This, and people have asked me, actually, what is the difference between a nomination and an endorsement? And I've explained that.
Right.
We just go back to Michael Dee. When he wasn't picked way back, whenever it was, the argument was that he couldn't win. And I thought that was a very, very weak argument at the time.
Okay.
Because one has to stand up for what matters. You make a decision. And I made that decision to stand as president, not because I had the money, not because parties were behind me, but because it was the right decision.
Catherine, what is your opinion of the Labour Party?
Well, this is a presidential campaign, you know, and the Labour Party have come in behind me and Ivana Bacic has led that and I very much welcome that.
You did say, though, that they'd lost their soul back in 2016.
Absolutely, I did at the time and that was what I said.
Have they regained their soul?
Yeah, it is a presidential campaign with parties behind me who have come together based on a number of core values. It's really important. This is above party politics.
So you don't want to give an opinion on the Labour Party?
This is above party politics. I have no difficulty giving my opinions as a TD, but I'm standing as a candidate in the presidential elections and we have gone beyond. We have achieved, we're at a historic moment where parties have come together, put aside their differences and focused on what we agree on. And it's really important that momentous decision is highlighted by me.
Okay.
And I'm very, very thankful that that has happened.
Back to the Middle East, your trip to Syria in 2018, you described it as a fact-finding mission. What facts were you hoping to find out? I mean, Assad's regime was viewed as barbarous and murderous. What facts were you looking for?
I wasn't looking for facts about Assad's regime. We knew the facts. I was looking at the refugee, the Palestinian refugee camps. And there was a group of very active community activists on the ground, and they had gone repeatedly over to the Middle East looking at refugee camps, and I joined them. In fact, some of those community activists had gone ahead of us to Beirut to visit a camp outside Beirut. As it happened, we could...
You did meet with officials, members of his chambers of commerce, officials sanctioned by his regime.
I absolutely answer everything for you. We joined a group. We didn't get to the camp outside Beirut. We got to the camp outside Damascus. I've kept the photos since then. They're a scene of destruction. I went foolishly thinking I was going to a refugee camp with tents when it was actually a city for Palestinian refugees. Utterly destroyed. Utterly destroyed. We went from there to various places, including a the visit has to be put in context of where I went and what we were doing. And we were going to meet people on the ground that could give us a perspective on what was happening. Not the Syrian government, not anybody to do with
this. Okay, you're
this.
Distancing yourself entirely from Assad, and I accept that. You said you self-funded it. How much did it cost?
Whatever the flight was at the time and the hotels.
Okay. Yeah. We will leave that there.
Yeah.
You have actually, in your time in the Iraq, this, in fact, it was your presidential rival, Heather Humphreys, who you were questioning, asked her about the status of non-binary persons in this country. In terms of gender ideology, do you believe there are more than two genders?
Yeah. I believe that an inclusive society allows people to self-identify. And we have to have an inclusive society. We're talking about a relatively small number of people. And as a psychologist going back, I know how difficult that is. You know, I worked as a psychologist. I trained in England. And I know how difficult it is for somebody to decide which gender and if they feel they're not the gender that they've been born.
Do you believe there are more than two?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
I think people have a right to self-identify.
And maybe a last question on this. Do you believe that trans athletes who have gone through male puberty should be allowed to take part in women's sports and female sports?
Yes, that has always been a complex area for me, and I'm no expert on it, and I've an open mind on that to look at it. I have that's as best as I can say.
So it's not a yes or a no. It's not a trick question. People want to know your views on things.
I understand that. Yeah.
Okay. You are Sinn Féin's preferred candidate. Why up until, and I couldn't find any mention of it up until 4 weeks ago, have you never mentioned your support for a United Ireland?
I'll answer that in two ways. One, I've gone over to the six counties many, many times. In the Dáil, I've been there since 16. And we form technical groups each time to get speaking time. So this time I'm part of a technical group of 8 people. Sometimes you get a minute to speak on the topic. I grabbed a minute yesterday in relation to the Children's Health Ireland, in relation to the long-awaited report. 1 minute and you get it. So we've chosen our time on the different topics that have come up. Northern Ireland hasn't come up for me, a United Ireland, to speak on, except actually in relation to votes for Northern Ireland people. And I absolutely, happy May on Jessin, I took that opportunity immediately to speak on giving votes to people in Northern Ireland. Let me just give my own thing. I have been to the six counties many, many times, personally and professionally as chair of the Irish committee. I've gone up to meet with Linda Irvine. We've had our meeting in Irish. It was something I didn't publicise. It was something I just did myself.
I accept that. I want to ask you one last question because unfortunately we're more or less out of time. What is your view on the fact that neither of your fellow candidates for president can speak Irish?
Yeah, you know, Irish is really important to me. It's our first official language. I think it's essential for a president to have the ability to speak Irish and to recognise the importance of Irish. I'm not given to criticising people who don't have Irish. It's not a way to do things with the Irish language. I've always tried to be positive, encourage people to use Irish, to go on the journey of learning it. And I'd like to stick with that approach. But certainly on a general level, it's very important to have Irish as president.
Independent presidential candidate Catherine Connolly, thank you very much for joining us.
News Talk Breakfast with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
In association with AIR
on News Talk.